Hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. I trust you have had an interesting and fun and enjoyable and intellectually stimulating and truthful and honest weekend. Welcome to the Jolly Heretic, of course, online public house. Meet on Mondays, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. We'll discuss based science and research increasingly expand from our woke joke universities. Okay, cheers, everybody. Cheers, Sakar Starmer. Cheers, Lipton. Kevin O'Makara, cheers, Lil Milky, cheers, Hurgen Gergen, K Piss, Saludo,
Prince, Yakida,
Skull, Service Sexy, Slandra, and Slandravar, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. No, we don't know where the Scottish bloke is, Sensible Centre. He specifically told me that he would be here 5 minutes before we started, and he's not here. So if anyone's with Count Dankula now that's watching this, to remind, he seems to have forgotten that he was going to come on here. I don't know where he is. But anyway, so hopefully he'll turn up. So cheers, he might have thought it was 6 p.m. Says, I don't know why he would have thought that, because I'm pretty sure I said 7 o'clock. But that doesn't make any sense. I can't actually go back through because there's problems with Twitter. I can't actually go back through my messages, but I'm pretty sure I said, no, I did say 7 p.m. tomorrow. That being yesterday. Anyway, so cheers, everybody, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. I hope you've all had a fascinating time. And I don't know if actually, like, the Prime Minister will be resigning during this. I mean, apparently somebody was thrown out of the Commons today, someone called Zara Sultana, which is an amusing name.
Lee Anderson was as well.
And Lee Anderson as well, for just openly calling him a liar. I can't see how, if Boris had to resign, we'll start on this, if Boris had to resign for some cake, then for some cake and a bit of champagne, then, I mean, this is, he literally, I don't understand this, Paul and Lipton. The Prime Minister literally said in November last year that this person passed screen,
yes.
Passed ministerial screen. He stated it directly that he was he was gone through and he was gone over, and that he to make sure there were no red flags, and there were no red flags. He stated literally that he had clearance. That's what he said. He had clearance. That's what he said. So I don't understand how he can now say that he wasn't told that he didn't have clearance when he's stating that he did have clearance, which means he must have been told that he did.
He was misled. The Prime Minister is infuriated because he was misled, and you can't blame him. Blame his advisors.
I stand
with Sir Keir Starmer.
I don't really get it. I don't see how you can blame his advisors, Sir Ollie Robbins, or as that guy Black Belt Barrister keeps calling him, and it really great. He keeps calling him Sir Robbins, and I can't emphasize enough that that's wrong and incorrect. And he's not Sir Robbins. He's Sir Ollie, Sir Oliver Robbins. So I think. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you doing?
Are you all right? Have you been in a car crash or some unpleasant incident?
What? No, why?
Well, no. You seem a bit cheesed off.
No. I'm not. I'm fine. I was in the middle of filming. And I came running out to do
Mark,
that.
Oh, sorry.
Mark, can you explain to him that this is Scottish bonhomie, isn't it? Your mood level.
Oh yeah, it's not. This is our
normal
baseline.
Base just level.
Yeah, just slightly furious all the time. Yeah, that's normal here.
Yeah. Have you two met?
No.
Okay, well, so Count Dankula, or Mark, as he's sometimes known in formal life.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know whether you wanted your proper name or not. Apologies.
No, it's fine. I don't really mind either way, to be honest.
It's like millennial woes. Like millennial woes. What?
Are you from Scotland?
Aye.
I love Scotland. I love Glasgow.
That's where I am right now, Glasgow. That's where I'm living just now.
Lipton, how long were you in Glasgow that gave you such acuity of hearing that you could work out Mark was from Scotland?
Did you spend all your time in Glasgow with Jamaicans, Lipton?
Yeah, I was in Glasgow like for a year, but I love it. I love Glasgow.
Is there a Jamaican community in Glasgow?
No, not at all, and that's good.
Yeah, fair enough. As long as you don't say the T word, but fine. All right, so cheers, everybody, and welcome. Cheers, Count Dankula, Mark, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. What we were talking about was the extent to which we're starting off. We're going to talk about Epsom, but it's just present news at the moment. I don't understand why the Prime Minister of England, the man that doesn't dream, why he can just lie, and he knows that he's lying, and he knows everyone knows that he's lying, and he can just get away with it. It does seem amazing.
I think I don't know what it is. I think it's just politicians just got too used to it, and I was getting angry about it, and then nothing happening. That they just do it now. They just blatantly lie like all the time. Like even when he was saying things like, "Oh, there's no two-tier system," but then you've got migrant rapists getting away with a slap on the wrist, and then you've got Facebook mums getting sent away for Facebook posts and stuff like that. And it's, I don't know. I think it's just everybody just got too complacent. They're like, "Oh, so fucking what if we're lying? They're not going to do anything about it." Like, I think that's why the line's just gotten so rampant recently, because they know that there's no repercussions. What's going to happen? Are they going to get shouted at on the parliament floor? Oh, like that. That's it. Yeah.
Well, there's no honour. I mean, in 1982, when they invaded the Falklands, Lord Carrington resigned as foreign secretary because he was foreign secretary and the Falklands had been invaded. So, well, this is such a fiasco that somebody has to take responsibility for this. I will take responsibility.
More recently, didn't Angela Rudd resign? And all she did was inadvertently, she got wrong information, passed it on to Parliament and immediately resigned because she was devastated.
Yeah. She took it seriously. Keir Starmer
lacks the, you know, I'm a bit of a dick gene. And on and on he goes, which I'm quite happy about in a way, because I think the longer he stays in, the more the establishment looks for what it is, and it can't even pretend it's otherwise, because it's just we're plumbing such depths of lack of honour and lack of decency that the long may it continue, so they can never claim the moral high ground ever again.
Well, the depths are the kind of people that might succeed this person should he ever have any honour and resign are David Lammy.
No,
he's Angela Rayner.
Angela Rayner. Now, I thought Angela Rayner was your pick.
I vacillate between the two because the comedy value would be almost equal for both of them.
No, I think the comedy value of having an actual chav as Prime Minister of modern Britain. I mean, you can't get that. You can't get much funnier than that. That's brilliant.
Like, as opposed to a turnip in a suit.
Yeah, but I just think there's something about a chap, a ginger chap who's had a breast enhancement.
Yeah, but that's more about your psychoanalytical needs. It's not about the actual, you know, politics, is it? You've got a thing for Big Ange. I really sense it.
I know. I just love the idea of Big Ange being in charge. I mean, I love the idea.
No, I think you want to be in charge of Big Ange in your imagination. You dirty, dirty man.
There's something deeply unattractive about Big Ange.
I think that's the psychoanalytical thing. I think you feel disgusted with your yearning for her, and you're in this weird Freudian loop.
Is this like the guys who are gay being like very, very outspokenly homophobic to try and cover it up?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what kind of chance does that give me? If I say that I find it actually very, very attractive, deeply, deeply attractive, then you'll just turn around and say, I told you so. God, it's like being in Life of Brian.
Oh, Ed, you've seen my rhetorical skill. This is what
we do. We set it up so that you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. That's the fun.
Either way, you like Big Ange. There's no question about it. I mean, it would be brilliant though. But that's the depth they've got to. That if this guy goes, this boring manager, this absolute dollard, then you're left with David Lammy, who, what was it? He was asked about a name a kind of blue cheese, and he said Red Leicester.
No, better than that. Who came after Henry VIII? Henry the Seventh.
I mean, and this guy has a degree in law from Oxford. I mean, I find it absolutely. But presumably they made certain exceptions with him. But I find it absolutely unbelievable. There's him, and then there's Ed Miliband, who lost an election 10 years ago, and everyone was saying, "Oh, what a useless person." And now he's a party grandee who it looks like, you know, might have to take over. It's the Rayner effect, as I called it in my article in Conservative Woman that they killed in the Daily Mail because it was too controversial. The Rayner effect, right? The left is becoming stupider quicker than the right. It will get worse than this. I mean, this guy, at least this guy seems moderately intelligent. It will just get worse. I don't understand. I mean, maybe in Scotland, are you sheltered from this in Scotland? Because Scotland is kind of semi-independent. People don't really care.
No, it's just like the vibe up here is weird recently. Like the SNP have became a little bit of a shell, but like nobody wants to go to Labour either. But up here we do kind of see the Greens as like loonies that frolic naked through fields and offer to make your breasts larger via hypnosis and everything. So basically everyone just feels a little bit weird up here and no one's really sure which direction to go in. Like no one will ever vote Tory. Either way, I mean, even the right up here aren't voting Tory because of what an abysmal job that they've done. But Reform, I'm going to say they're probably going to do a lot better in Scotland than people expect up here. But as for like the SNP and Labour, etc., no one really knows what to do.
Don't they see Reform as, you know, like English and British and therefore bad and not sufficiently Scottish?
Not if you're a Hun. They're fine with, you know, if you're that was a slur. It's basically like if you're Protestant and everything, then nah, they vibe with Reform. They love the royal family, they love being British and all that type of stuff. And so that's like, and that's like half the population up here, even if a lot of them like don't want to admit it. But I think Reform would do rather well up here because I know someone who is actually running as a candidate and he says that he gets a lot of shit when he's out in the streets and stuff like that, but he says he's getting a lot more like acceptance than he was expecting. He's saying things like every third house seems to be kind of happy to see me, and they've said, oh, don't worry, we're voting for you guys. Like, I don't know a thing about you, but I'm voting Reform. And everyone like didn't want to have a chat with his candidate or anything like that. Like, just they were like, oh, don't worry, I'm voting for you and everything. And things people are just getting fed up and everything. And the Tories, we just got 15 years of shit, just 15 years of shit for the Tories. It was essentially leftism driving the speed limit with the Tories. And I was so excited about, see how we were talking about funny people being Prime Minister. I was genuinely so excited about a Bojo Prime Ministership because I was remembering all the memes. I remember the zip line while waving the flags. I remember how he flattened a child during a charity rugby match. Phenomenal. Or like his big whiff-waff rant. I was like, oh God, this is going to be like Trump, but even more retarded. It's going to be great. It's going to be funny. And it just wasn't. There was no memes, there was no banter, like, no.
There was nothing. I was looking forward to it as well. I remember I was celebrating. We had a Jolly Heretic election special back when it was me and this co-author of mine called Michael Woodley of Manee. And I got the result before he did. I don't know why it came. I was sort of semi-watching it. 86, the predictive result. I remember going, 86! Like this. And then Michael was exploded with joy. He's like, yes, Ed, then we're going to do this and we're going to stop immigration and we're going to make the country great again. And then his dad came running into the room. 86! It was like, yeah, and we were so excited. And then very quickly, it was just COVID almost immediately. And, and that was it. They couldn't do anything. And all they had to do with COVID was just stick to the plan, which was that we are in crass Darwinian terms. My friend Paul here likes this phrase, crass Darwinian. But we are an advanced form of ape. We are basically like cattle that have tamed ourselves. You let the foot and mouth or whatever run through the herd, and then you have healthy survivors. Everyone that knows anything about farming knows that.
I'm confused, Ed. Are we apes or are we cows or are we ape cows?
Well, we're comparable. We're apes, but we're also very, very group oriented. So that's why I gave a comparison. I mean, you can give a comparison. Like the point is, we're pack animals, and you let it run through the herd, and then you have a healthier herd. Of course, if you have something so dangerous, like when I was at university and we were coming back from university in the holidays, we had to drive through like funny water with chemicals in past piles of cows on their backs on fire. And this is in about 2001. It was unpleasant.
That reminds me of Liverpool before COVID.
Well, yeah. That's no way to talk about Liverpoolian women. But they are. But like, the most extreme example of that slapperish woman I actually ever noticed was Aberdeen. And it's only in Aberdeen that I was walking down Union Street late at night on the night of my PhD viva, and this woman, just a girl, I don't know what she was, 30, just pulled the knickers down, just pissed in the street openly in the outside McDonald's in Aberdeen, and she had no trouble with that. I've seen bad behaviour from women. Oh no, I did see that in the Netherlands actually when I was at Leiden University, but they kind of they went down an alleyway in the dark. They didn't just do it in front of McDonald's. Yes, Lipton.
Yeah, I was just about to tell Count Dankula that you like to talk. And it's time for you to stop.
Because it's time for me to stop. Black
yeah, privilege. I want to speak. Go. I want to talk about the New Statesman, because we're talking about women. There was an article in the New Statesman saying that women in the UK, even when they are successful, they're so infuriated and upset all the time, especially the more successful women. And I just laughed. I didn't read all of the article because I'm not interested in hearing about silly people, silly liberal women.
Yes, I heard about this, that that men kind of don't mind women, at least in the America or in the UK, but the women really, really, really hate and despise the men.
Yeah, exactly. They're always depressed.
I hate women.
Yeah, yeah. They can be irritating sometimes. It has to be said.
They can be real. Like, these days, I'm not going to lie. I am tired of hearing about liberal women and their problems.
Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't have as many problems if they just were. If they basically just, you know, to a certain extent, sort of lived in a patriarchal kind of a way, which is how they evolved to do, and they would be happy. But they don't, and they enforce the dictatorship. Speaking of which, let's move on to the topic which I brought up, which is apparently there are new protests going on in Epsom now, and I note that when this kind of outbreak of semi-violence happens in Epsom, there is riot police everywhere, all over the place, to stop people doing anything. Whereas, of course, in Clapham, then nothing happens and they're allowed to just run amok. Why is it that we British need to be, not just Scottish people, obviously they need to be policed heavily, but British need to be policed? Paul?
Because if they don't, it really will kick off. It was like the Lucy Connolly being sent to prison. There's a real need to stop the pressure cooker exploding.
Yeah, but I don't know why they don't fear. It's only the British they fear. I think they're making it worse and worse and worse and worse. They're showing it to be completely biased. They're showing it that eventually we're going to explode.
They're also, coincidentally, they're thick as mints and they can't see that this will be the end result. I've already said several times on this channel that the police used to have some type of respect. You know, they police by consent. And decade on decade, that respect's gone and gone and gone, to the point that for a lot of people, it's completely non-existent and that police are seen as the enemy. And I know that's always been true from various sectors of society, but I think there's quite a lot of well-heeled middle-class people now who hold the police in contempt, and that's a new phenomenon.
They just seem so stupid.
Malevolent and suicidally empathetic with their actual enemies, and so on and so on. It's not.
There's a part of me that thinks it's on purpose.
Mark.
There's a part of me that thinks it's on purpose, because a lot of the things that the police are doing to like stop the riot is like having like the opposite effect, and they are fully aware that it does. Like any time like some 15-year-old gets referred to prevent, because you get caught with some peppy memes on his phone and everything, he has to sit in front of the officers and the social worker and everything and explain your existence, explain your race, explain this, explain why you think like this. And they get confused because they're like, well, we've spent my entire life telling me that young white men are shit. We're terrible. We deserve this. We deserve that. We've done all these horrible things, even though it was from when I wasn't even born and everything. And it's like, so yeah, I fucking hate you. Like, of course I do. And then when they come out of that prevent meeting, they're even worse. And there's people as well. I've spoken to people who've been arrested for a speech that they, you know, they tweeted something about migrants or they said something a little bit spicy. And then they go to prison and they come out of prison fully radicalized. Fully, completely radicalized when they come out of prison. And the police know that that is happening. They know that the censorship and everything's just making everything worse, yet they continue to do it. And it's like, if someone throws petrol on a fire when they're trying to put it out, the immediate result should make them go, okay, that doesn't work. Let's try something else. But instead, doing it.
There are structural things whereby, for example, if you want to get promoted within the police, when an organization commits bureaucratic suicide, there's an asymmetry, so the thing that's worst for the country is best for your career. So yeah. Even though they know it might be counterproductive for the country, if it helps them get a chief constable, you know, position, they'll do it.
Yeah.
It's the banality of evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more that. No. A lot of them, I mean, I know a few people from school that went into the police, and they were just sort of ordinary and reasonably good-hearted people. I don't know if they're that now. I mean, now perhaps they've got drawn into the system and they like persecuting housewives that express their feelings. But when
the police force has become the male version of human resources.
To the extent that it is male. I mean, that's the thing. When we was kids, the police were men. They were men of about 5'10" that were reasonably built. And in those days, if you were clever and you were like lower middle class or working class, you couldn't go to university or whatever. And one thing that was really, really respected was to be a policeman. Like I had a friend, his dad was a policeman. And his granny, Irish granny, you know, she was so proud that both her sons were policemen. Like to be a policeman, that was somebody and something in the kind of working class community of South London. And they were probably people that would have gone to university these days. But
I think it's because it's no longer a case of, oh, you catch murderers and rapists and bad guys. You're a net benefit to the community. You're doing such wonderful work. Now you're arresting grannies because they had an argument like on Facebook with someone and someone said something they maybe shouldn't have. Or you're like pulling some 15-year-old out of school and like yelling at him because he used a naughty no-no word on the playground and stuff like that. And it's just the type of things. And I've spoken to police officers where... obviously, I've had dealings with the police and everything, and I can remember, I'm not going to say the guy's name because of what he said to me, but during my trial, there was someone who was given evidence against me, and he worked for the police. And throughout the trial, you could tell all the way through it, he was like, this is beneath me. This is why am I here? Like, why am I here at this trial for this nonsense? And we were in the toilets like together, and I was taking a piss, and he started pissing next to me, and I went, when you went through your fancy police college, is this what you saw yourself doing? And he went, no, it wasn't. Like that. And he was just like, yeah, a lot of them don't want to be doing this shit, but whenever they get given their orders, they can't turn around to their boss and go, well, no, I'm not arresting them for that. They have to go and do it.
And you interviewed, as I have done, Sam Melia. And one of the things that I found fascinating about that case is that it's so counterproductive. It's turned him into a hero. And the people that he was dealing with, including there was one where he wasn't a police officer, he was a social worker or something like this, that he had to be interviewed by. And his attitude was that this is ridiculous. This guy is no threat to society. This is a complete waste of time. This is a waste of everyone's time. It's a waste of my time. But they had to go through the motions. They had to go through the motions of his week, of his every 2 weeks, of his fortnightly struggle session. He had two people. One was the political one that was just wanted to hurt him. That was part of the regime, and one was somebody that actually got into it to do good things.
Yeah, he kept winning the debates against the political one as well all the time. When he went, why are you saying that we're being replaced? And he went, well, here's the facts, here's the figures, here's the statistics, here's all the factual data that supports what I've just said. And basically, it was. And when it comes to that point, they were still looking to punish him, and it's like you're trying to punish a guy for being right. Like, he's correct, he's pointing at a serious issue, he's backed up his statement with facts and statistics, and then I think one of them even said to him, well, okay, even if it is true, why do you care? And everything, so that was the things that he had to deal with, where he's like, okay, so you've acknowledged that I'm right. Yeah, I'm having to sit here in front of police and social workers and shrinks and everybody else and everything when you've all kind of agreed with me that I'm right, so why am I being punished and treated like I'm a criminal? Because I've pointed out something true.
Can I push back a bit at you? Because I think you've been deeply, deeply unfair and maybe factually inaccurate to the extent that Keir Starmer was actually in the White House and said that we've got free speech in the UK, we've had it for a long time, and we always will. And I think you're being very disrespectful of the chief politician in our country.
Oh, that's an absolute shame. I did rage when I saw him see that. No, like, I was sitting there with my criminal record like, are you fucking joking? What do you mean we've got freedom of speech? I work with people that have been arrested. Like, there was one of them as well, as these people didn't want my help because they were leftists. There was an anarchist-owned, like, not like actual true anarchists, you know, people that like to read Hans Hermann Hoppe or anything like that. I'm talking about the people with, like, funny coloured hair who still think taxation should happen, and that's totally anarchism. Basically, they got in trouble with the police because they had a tote bag hanging in their shop window that said, fuck the police. And they got investigated, and there was threats of arrest and everything like that just for having that hanging in their window.
Oh, God, yeah. They can be very unpleasant. They can be... I wonder if it was female. That's another thing that undermines it. There's research on this. I think her name was Dame Carol Black, who did the research about 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And she found that a profession, once it reaches a certain percentage of females, it is seen as a girl's game. And once it's seen as a girl's game, then it just loses respectability. And it's just sort of held in faint contempt by a lot of men. And I don't think the police has quite reached that yet. Because ultimately, you do need people that can, you know...
You get female officers everywhere now. Now, I understand having female officers on staff to, like, perform searches on women. Right? That's fine. But they're really starting to fill the police force up with women. And as someone who has had many, many tangles with the police, especially in my youth, they're useless. They're completely useless. Because say that two female police officers try and arrest me and I plan on resisting the arrest, they're not getting me. Like when I was younger, if it was female police officers, I would always run. They would never catch me. I was like, I know you're not catching me. I would always run. I would always get away. And as I guess, I was just being a little shit back then. But like, what if it was someone who was like a serious criminal? Like they've got no hope in hell of catching this guy.
Well,
like, you're not...
There was the incident at Manchester Airport, the violence there.
Yeah. Yes.
The female police officers, all she could do was hold her nose. No. And basically say, why, my nose is broken.
Why don't we just get to the point?
What's the point, Lipton?
Let me tell you the point. It's quite
tell
simple.
Us the point, Lipton. Come on.
Systematization. Men are more systematic than women. So even if a man is effeminate or short and weak, he's likely to be a systematic thinker. Systematic thinkers are process and outcomes or an outcome oriented. Women tend to be bureaucratic. They care more about the process than the outcome. And they're also empathetic. So a woman is highly unlikely to be a ruffian. Personally, I have no issue with women working. They say that they're liberated. Good for them. But a serious society can't be a feminized society.
Yeah, you're right about that. I remember years ago, like about 1998 or something, my mom did a master's degree. So she'd been out of university for ages and she decided to do a master's degree at UCL, what's now UCL. And she said to my dad, you should do a master's degree as well. And he said, well, why would I do that? And she said, oh, well, because if there's something that really interests you, you can do a master's degree about it. And he said, well, why would I do that? If something interests me, I'll just read some books about it. What are you talking about? Oh, yeah, but the master, it gives you like the structure. And my dad was like, well, what structure? What are you talking about? And he said, if I want to, I'll read a book. What are you talking about? And that seemed to me to encapsulate the fundamental difference between the male sort of way of thinking about things and the female way of thinking about this idea that it's the process. It's like putting a picture on the fridge with a tick, very good, and a star. They love that.
Yeah. Let me give you another example. So for instance, social work. Social work is often seen as a low IQ profession, and that is problematic. It is true, but it is problematic. It is problematic because social work is complicated, and if social work is complicated, you should ensure that your social workers are problem solvers. But many social workers are not highly intelligent, and they're also women. So
they're
what are we going to get?
Two things against them. They're both
exactly.
Women.
What are we going to get? We're going to get
why is social work complicated? All single parent children should be put in huge internment camps. And that would be very, very simple and systematic.
Did you read about this thing today? I read about it in the newspaper about these two gays. One was a teacher and one was a salesman or something. And they were given this child with a view to it called Preston, with a view to adopting him. And they tortured him and sexually abused him and photographed it and filmed it for their own amusement. And then they killed him.
There are several stories of that nature.
This is a trial that's happening at the moment, and they've both pled not guilty. And they seem to have done things like tortured him, and then as a memento, taken photographs of him, buggered him. And this is a child of like 13 months. And the social, I'm assuming that the social workers were involved in this because it was a potential adoption. The idea was that the child lives with you for a few months, and if it goes well, you get to adopt it. And the social workers, I assume they had regular visits from the social workers. Nothing at all.
Because social workers are more interested in placating bad behavior than solving the problem.
Yeah, but I go back to be serious for a second, I go back to the point, I don't think social work inherently needs to be complicated. It's made complicated, but I don't see why in principle it has to be.
There is a lot of bias in social work as well. Women have their bias. Well, if there's a situation, they'll very often side with the women as well. There was a recent event that happened to a friend of mine where he had an ex that was making a bunch of false reports about him constantly all the time, and they were treating him like he was some crazy criminal and stuff like that when it came to the kids, even though he'd done absolutely nothing wrong. And it took a little while before social work actually did their own research and discovered that the girl had a bit of a history. Now they're being nice to him and they're kind of treating him like a human, whereas the entire time they immediately came in with bias. Oh, is it a man? Man's guilty. The man's guilty. And bear in mind, they're all drinking for the same like fucking woke punch bowl as everybody else. So obviously when it came to like two gay men wanting to adopt a baby, they were probably all, oh, this will look so good when I tweet it out. Yeah, of course you can totally have the child and everything, because maybe, you know, maybe the same reason for the grooming gangs where they didn't actually want to investigate them in case they looked racist. Maybe they didn't want to reject these two guys in case they looked homophobic.
No, it's almost certainly it. And so they open, yeah. Oh, that he's got a bit of a bruise there. Oh, well, probably he banged his head on the edge of the cot or something. Oh, you know, it's absolutely incredible. And in the end, they brought his semi-lifeless body to hospital. And the boy, they literally adopted this, or tried to adopt this boy in order to just torture him, basically. And sexually abuse him. It's absolutely incredible.
There was another famous case as well where it was an American couple, and they had two boys, and there's even a picture of them where the guys are sitting on the couch with the two kids, and they're all wearing the rainbow flag T-shirts, all smiling and all happy. But it ended up, basically details came out about it, and it was pretty fucking horrific, the stuff that the boys went through. So the two of them are going to prison for a very long time, and the two boys are back in care. And like that's just going to absolutely mess the pair of them up for life, because basically they're within the system. They think the system's going to look after them, take care of them, you know, make sure all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed, and making sure everything's safe before they get placed with a family. And instead, had to deal with years and years of horrific abuse.
But you know, like in medieval times, they had the system of indulgences in the Catholic Church, so you could buy future redemption from purgatory. Well, it strikes me that the more overtly virtue signaling you are, the more you're on the right side of the woke mindset, the more in your personal life you think, well, I've done X, Y, and Z that's good. Now maybe I'm allowed a bit of leeway.
That's a very
I think that was the way that Savile tried to rationalise what he did as well. Mm. Like, you see how he was doing obviously a lot of horrific shit behind the scenes, but he also done tons and tons of charity work.
It's like a moral quid pro quo.
This is one of the first times I've known Paul for a number of years, and this is one of the first times he's actually made quite a good point.
He
normally just sits there, this sort of grumpy.
I'll take it back then. If you agree with it, it's obviously a shit point.
I reject it entirely.
You're cravat-wearing tosser.
Fine. Well, then I'll happily take it as my point that I invented then, so fuck you.
Well, I assumed you were anyway. You're plagiarizing.
No, I will, because I'm not David Reich of Harvard University. I don't go around stealing other people's ideas. We'll get to that later.
No, he's a bright guy. David is really smart.
Bastard and a fucker, and I hate him. And the
kind of are you talking about me still?
I like that beat.
Was that me? Hey, Ed, or was that David?
David Reich.
So you don't absolutely hate me, you just slightly hate me.
I hate you. Yeah. I hate you the sensible amount that anyone would hate an Edwin from King Lear type.
David Pfeiffer, for people who don't know, is this researcher who published articles in a Cambridge-sponsored journal, and Nature. Then David and his co-authors produced a similar study, and they didn't cite David Pfeiffer.
They literally state that no one's ever said this before. No one's ever looked at the possibility of ancient genomes and how ancient genomes might be a way of discovering if we were selecting for whatever, you know, in the past. No one's done this. That's what he said. That's what they wrote. Okay. And that's a complete, this is bollocks. That's rubbish. Davide Pfeiffer has been doing it for years and years. And they openly said, oh, yeah, well, we were familiar with him. Yeah, we had read about his stuff, but. We don't agree with his methodology, so we thought we'd just completely ignore it. That's basically because he looks at race differences. That's it. That's a reason he can be plagiarized. Or at least not acknowledged for what he's done. That's what they've done. This is a professor of evolutionary psychology or whatever it is at Harvard and his research group. And they've just presented this as, oh, well, we've just discovered this amazing thing that we were under positive selection in Europe 10,000 BC. Since 10,000 BC, we've been selecting for all kinds of things, intelligence, whatever. Well, this is our new finding. Like, there's people who've been arguing that. I mean, when was the 10,000-year explosion published?
Years ago, by Henry Arpin, years ago, maybe 2009 or
2009. I think it was 2009. Yeah. Oh, well, that didn't exist because those people weren't woke. Those people weren't respectable.
And then John Hawkes, do you remember? John Hawkes has been doing research on evolution, recent evolution. Peter Frost is always covering research on recent evolution.
Loads of people have done research on recent evolution, and these people, just because he's at Harvard and he's well, we can't say that, but he, you know what I want to say, I can't. he's at Harvard and that I can't say. And he's a bit
interestingly, like, Ed. Richard Lynn had some old studies showing us why ancient IQ was important too.
Right. And so suddenly, oh, it's amazing he's found this. He's found there was selection for ginger hair. Well, that guy you mentioned earlier, with the funny haircut that came on here, what was his name? Frost? He did loads of stuff on the evolution of gingerness. Loads and loads of stuff. What? Oh, suddenly he doesn't exist. I mean, this guy is a fucking bastard and I hate him. I googled David Reich recently, and I got his Wikipedia page up, and I saw his photo, and I stared at it like in South Park, and I wished cancer upon him. that's how strongly I feel. I stand for a good 5 minutes until my eyes kind of hurt a little bit, and then I stopped because my wife called me. I had to go and cook the dinner. but for that period of time, I wished cancer on him, and he's only 51.
Can I just clarify something, Ed? You're legally allowed to supervise children, aren't you?
For their doctors.
And drive a car.
I am legally allowed to drive a car and supervise children. Yes, I drove a car earlier.
Just clarifying that obviously Finnish social services aren't doing their job.
This is a country. The hypocrisy in attitudes towards corporal punishment you get in countries where it's banned. So this is it's corporal punishment is banned in Finland.
Segwaying neatly to another one of your fetishes,
and it's been banned since I don't know what it means. It's fetish. I'm just telling you about.
But there's no natural segue.
There's a segue because
it's like stream of consciousness. All your perversions coming out.
No, I'm thinking of the kinds of things that social services get involved in, and I know of cases where like Sudanese people or whatever have been hitting their kids and they just overlook it and say, oh, well, they're Sudanese. You know, that's the attitude of Finnish social services here. I think it's... And, of course, they were founded because women are hyper-social conformist. When social services, social work was founded, the people in charge were eugenicists.
But can't we go back a step? Don't you think that's one of the positive aspects of immigration, good old-fashioned some social values?
When you say social value, what do you mean, beating kids?
You say beating kids, I say instilling discipline and a healthy sense of respect.
All right, okay, fair enough then. Yeah, I think that that is true.
And with your crass psychological data last week, didn't you say that corporal punishment studies have shown that actually it produces better psychological outcomes?
Yes, that is true. It does. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
If you control for the confounds, so mentally ill people beat their kids, and the kids are mentally ill, but that doesn't mean that beating the kids or whatever is causal. They're just genetically mentally ill. So if you control for the confounds, then yeah, it has positive outcomes, particularly among people that are evangelical Christians. In fact, if evangelical Christians are not thrashed, then it has negative psychological outcomes for them. They get very upset.
Well, I have another point that's important, and I have to say it. But as you do know, one of my favorite thinkers is George Wooster Dekoff. He has two new books. I won't talk about them, but what I will say, since we are discussing the contentious issue of immigration, is that immigrants, not all of them, obviously, but there are differences in cultural and psychological development. So immigrants from the third world, especially those who are not highly educated, they're basically children. Pre-modern men were children. So that's George Wooster Dekoff theory.
That's a very good point. By the way, here's my study, Paul. Look, medical hypotheses. It was my study on corporal punishment.
Cole Dankula seems interested in what I have to say. So Cole Dankula, there's this sociologist called George Wooster Dekoff. and he's a classical sociologist. And he has written that pre-modern people were basically at the child stage of development. And in the developing world, there are many people who are still below the formal stage of development. So many of these immigrants are corrupt and they molest women simply because they do not know better. In other words, we're flooding the country with primitive people.
Yeah, yeah, that's, I mean, have you seen any documentaries, Lipton, on the pygmies, the Mbutu pygmies of the Congo?
No, I haven't watched.
It's really quite interesting. You know, what you expect of hunter-gatherers is they go out and they know the terrain, and they know all the herbal medicines and stuff, and they go out and they look for the animal and they wait and they pounce and they kill it, and that's it, you know, because they're hunter-gatherers and it's harsh, you know. That's not what happens at all with the pygmies, the Mbutu pygmies. They go out and they go out to kill something, and they kill it, and they could kill a lot more than they kill, but then it just becomes a game. It just literally turns into a game. And they just start splashing each other with water from the river and just having a bit of a laugh, and that's the level that they're at. And it's very tragic with the Mbutu pygmies, because the Africans, I mean the Negroids, regard them as non-human and eat them.
I've also heard that sometimes people used to hunt them.
Yeah,
and I've heard that with some British explorers as well, used to actually hunt them, thinking they were some kind of primate because they were so small.
I know it's an inappropriate comment, but I'll make it anyway. Wouldn't that be the cannibalistic equivalent of, like, chicken McNuggets?
They're about the size of a chicken nugget.
Yeah.
It's like... that's upsetting now, Paul. That's got me thinking back to when McDonald's was aimed at children in the 1980s. And each of the separate chicken nuggets had a personality. And there was a TV
commercial. Maybe we could return to those days.
It was set in World War II.
How about McDonald's? Hey, we could market this idea to them. We could patent it. Pygmy McNuggets.
Well, I imagine. I don't mean to be crass, but I imagine they would taste like chicken, because they've interviewed cannibals from the South Seas and whatever, and they say that
the McPygmy.
You've just
got the Hamburglar, but he's wearing, like, you know, one of those, like, British Legion hats, running with two of them under his arms. Last back to the ship,
and then dipping them in barbecue sauce and biting their heads off.
Oh, you need sauce on your pygmies; they get very dry.
They do. They do because they're evolved to a wet environment. The jungle, so take them out of it; they're going to dry out very quickly. So you dip them in. That's got me thinking. It used to be there was something wholesome about fast food, Lipton. You won't remember this because you're too young and you're from Jamaica, but it was aimed at. It was aimed at children. It was aimed at even the most anodyne commercials. I remember there was one of them that in about 1988, and there was a granddad on it, and he goes, "Happy birthday, dear! What do you do for your birthday?" "You went to McDonald's." And that was back when having a McDonald's in your hometown was a sign that your hometown was on the map, like a town. Was...
Yeah,
I've always thought Ronald McDonald. Ronald McDonald, it was just basically Jimmy Savile with massive shoes.
Oh, yeah. That was
not a healthy advert.
No, I suppose not. There was this clown, this weird clown that liked hanging around with children. Michael Jackson-like, really. Michael Jackson-like. And he liked, I don't know if he liked looking up their anuses as Michael Jackson.
Talking about
did.
People who hang around children, I can hear on Lipton's microphone.
Now remember, Lipton, what the research says. Remember what the research says. If they play up, remember what it says. Remember what we've agreed on.
Ed, is that true? I would have thought random hitting is probably more productive because they never know when, so they're more.
That wasn't what was found. No, it was found that it has to be that you've done something wrong. There's a consequence, and you're calmly beaten. And that was associated with positive mental health and positive social outcomes.
No, I always remember I used to go to my dad, "Hey, what was that for?" And he'd go, "Now you know what you'll get if you do something."
That's a very good point. I like the way that sort of he preempted it. He knew you'd be a complete cunt about something. He knew it. Yeah. Right? It was inevitable. Did you call him a crass Darwinist? You say, AR, Dad, that's a really crass Darwinist opinion that you're forgiven. And your accent that you're doing sounds Welsh.
And that's not fair.
That's a very, very reductionist point of view, our father. and then he just hit you and said, look, if you don't accept the full consequences of evolutionary theory, R. Paul, then you know, I'm gonna have no consequence. But oh, you are a mucky kid. Dirty.
I've just had this weird image of my dad dressed as Cilla Black because of your accent going in and out. I'm going to need therapy.
Your dad just pops out the cupboard like, surprise, surprise, and hits you.
Laura Violent.
We're going to have a lot of thrashings here tonight, our pet, because you've used
that. Do you want option A? A whack around the end?
The belt with the barbed bits on the end? Or option B, just go outside and fend for yourself in Liverpool? I was going to make a joke then about something else to Liverpool, but it's not appropriate. Right, okay, we're about halfway through. So to those of you new, hello, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, online public house, but it's on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss based science and stuff that's increasingly expanding from our woke joke universities. If you are new, will you do us all a jolly good favour? Will you please, the links are in the description, will you please subscribe? Will you subscribe on here on the old... excuse me, YouTube, and subscribe on my Substack, that's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most base stuff I can't put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make, including an interview with Count Dankula, a formal interview in a formal environment. It was a little bit embarrassing, actually, because he turned up and nobody was there to greet him. I was at the pub over the road, and I was assuming my secretary would be there, and she wasn't there. And I was assuming somebody else, that they weren't there. It was very embarrassing. But we had the interview, and you will find that where we talk about Coatbridge.
Yeah, Coatbridge, that's what I'm
talking about. We talk about Coatbridge and many other things. You can subscribe on there. And then next we have Sir Keir Starmer, which means what, Paul?
So I'm reliably informed. I apologise in advance if it's wrong, but Keir is the Farsi word for male appendage. And car means donkey. And Keir Car is a very bad insult, meaning not that you own the properties of, but you actually are the quality of a donkey's appendage.
In Dutch, a really rude thing you can say to somebody is they are a paardenlul, which means a horse's willy.
And, anyway, and they wish konkerlul on people. Fikte konkerlul.
Konkerlul, and they wish canker on people as well, which is cancer. Godverdomme.
Godverdomme, cut five.
Yeah, hold the dommer. It is a moeilijk taal. Okay, now we have Dr. Paul Taylor there. So would you please subscribe to his channel, which is called Readers of the Lost Art, where he takes a wry and misanthropic look at literature that is 100 years old or older.
Can I give an illustration, Ed? I'm about to do a video on Christopher Nolan's Memento film through the prism of James Joyce's Ulysses and
Hamlet. That's
very interesting,
because that night I told you about in Aberdeen when I saw that woman piss in the street, I just watched Memento.
Oh, had you?
In an area of Aberdeen called Holborn, which is the posh bit.
Well, my theory is it's a very clever form of Hamlet.
Okay, there's someone saying they are also a paardenlul, which is interesting. And don't interrupt me during this bit. I've told you so many times. Okay, like for God's sake, right? Okay, and then next we have Mr. Lipton Matthews. Subscribe to Paul's channel is what I'm saying. Mr. Lipton Matthews, who interviews all kinds of interesting people on his channel because he has black privilege. Which got me in trouble in a strip club in Swindon when I mentioned that once. Please subscribe to his channel, which is Lipton Matthews. And then finally, we have Count Dankula. Please subscribe to his channel, where he has all kinds of interesting stuff. I particularly like his stuff on violent kinds of wrestling. I'm a big fan of those. And his mad lads.
Ed, can I just jump in? He did a brilliant video on Frankie Boyle and why he's an arsehole.
I haven't seen that yet. I'll write that down. But I liked his mad lad on that Finnish soldier in the Winter War that accidentally took loads of drugs.
I'm not sure, Ed, I'm not sure you'd like that video on Frankie Ball because it's very on point, it stays on topic, and it's very, very rational. So I don't think you'd like it.
Yeah, but he's not live, is he? He's sitting there in the studio, stopping and then starting again and stopping and starting again. It's like watching watching bloody Bagpuss or something.
I'll tell you a weird thing that happened about that video, by the way. Literally the day after I filmed it, the day after I filmed that video, I went to my barber's to get my hair cut. And as I walked in, who was sitting in the chair getting his hair cut? Fucking Frankie Boyle. I'm not joking. Just sitting there. And we caught each other in the mirror. And I recognised him right away, obviously. And I was like, oh. But then I seen him. He looked at me and then looked away. But then he looked back at me as if a sort of a, I know you from somewhere, like kind of face. And I could tell he was sort of like, where do I know you from? And I was just kind of like, oh. And I just went and sat down. And the guy who did, when the guy just finished cutting Frankie's hair, that was the guy who was cutting my hair next. And when I sat down, the guy knows who I am, and he was like, do you see, I was just cutting Frankie Boyle's hair. And I was like, I just recorded a takedown video of him yesterday. And he was like, oh, you didn't, did you? And I was like, he's a wank, mate. The guy's a complete wank.
You should have paid the barber £50 to cut his hair. God, I can't stand him.
No, I used to love him way back in the day when he was
he was brilliant. But, that's like, why, yeah, I can't stand him.
Amazing, yeah.
He never had any talent in the first place. Why would you be upset with him? But he was a really talented comedian, and he completely sold out.
Sorry, yeah. So someone I do as a person that's lived abroad for 21 years, I know who he is, and I'm going back years and years now. I saw clips of him online or whatever. Big ginger guy, ginger beard, glasses, right? And he would do quite harsh. Well,
one of his jokes was Rebecca Adlington. She was a cyclist, wasn't she? Is that her name?
Swimmer?
I think so, yeah. He said she had a
weird nose, and he said she looks like someone looking at themselves in the back of a spoon. So they weren't just cruel, they were clever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, his jokes were just really funny. Some of them were just like out of pocket, like that Harvey Price joke when he says, I think Jordan married a cage fighter so that she has someone strong enough to stop Harvey from fucking her, right? Which was
oh my god,
yeah, that was a nuclear joke. And you did see people in the audience kind of like, like, what the fuck, Frankie? Like, but that was a great joke.
Yeah, but
like,
now he preaches to people to be kind.
He has Prada Willy syndrome. And Prader-Willi syndrome, unfortunately, means that you have all of the bad things about Down syndrome, but none of the good things at all. And also, because people with Down syndrome, they're very, very socially perceptive and socially intelligent and kind and agreeable for their age. They're very pro-social people because they age very quickly. And we get pro-social.
Have you seen the footage where Katie Price and him are on morning TV or daytime TV? And they were talking about online trolling, and they said, so Harvey, what would you say to someone who was bullying you online? And he said, hello, C-word. And they were like, you don't say that, Harvey.
Yeah, I know. They chinned him for it and like got him into trouble, and then the channel like gave out like a public apology, and it's just like, oh, shut up. Shut up. To be fair, he's right. Man, like he was right and everything, and it's
but also the stupidity. Yeah. You have someone with mental disability on. Guess what? They'll do something unpredictable. Who'd have thought?
Can I just speaking quickly? I just want to say we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic, Mr. Quinn, and he's written the following poem in light of tonight's extravaganza. If you're protesting in Surrey, the police will be there in a hurry. But if you're not white, then crime seems all right, even when you're delivering curry. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn.
Hey.
If you would like to subscribe to Mr. Quinn's YouTube channel, which he has, it's called The Resident Poet of the Jolly Heretic, and also he has a book of Jolly Heretic poetry, which is available on the old Amazon. But anyway, sorry about that. Going back to it. What did they expect of him? The people that have Prader-Willi syndrome are mentally retarded to a significant degree, whereas with Down syndrome there's variation, there's quite a lot of variation you can get. I mean, I think that in Spain there's now a Down syndrome woman that is a member of parliament, because if they have it depends on how much of the extra chromosome they have.
Well, the UK parliament was obviously ahead of the curve.
That's a good point. Yeah. What do you think that David Lammy has? Just really mild Down syndrome.
I think he's been disowned by the Downs Association.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants to be associated with him.
They have certain standards.
Well, they have certain minimum IQ.
Oh, yeah, they must do. Yeah, they must do. But 70.
Well, Ed.
Gibson, there's a cat I want to talk loudly.
Yes. I want to talk about Japan.
Okay, that's not on my list, but okay.
Yeah, and let me tell you why I want to talk about Japan, because I'm interested in the diffusion of Confucianism from China to South Korea and to Japan, and why it was not more effective in Japan, and the impact of the lack of its effectiveness in Japan on Japan's early industrialization. Well,
is there a way we can make that money? Look, I'm like, sorry.
Okay, can may I continue?
Yeah, but if you make it funny, could you make it funny?
What funny about South Korean Confucianism?
The idea is it's a wry
look. It is
look.
Funny because the Japanese, they embrace Confucianism. They Japanize it. So I wouldn't say it wasn't effective. It was not as effective as the diffusion to Korea. So the Japanese, they were less conservative and it was easier for them to embrace Western technology during the Meiji era. I just like Japanese history.
You're not going to
talking
the eyes,
about Ed, talking about Confucianism, can I ask Mark, are you familiar with Anthony Jeselnik's work?
No.
Oh, check him out on Netflix, Anthony Jeselnik. I think he'd be right up your street.
What is it he does?
It's one-liners, really, really sick one-liners, one after the other, really slowly.
Right.
I think something tells me you'd really like his work. Immediately after the Chicago Marathon, he tweeted almost immediately, there are some lines you just shouldn't cross.
That's good.
He does that all the time.
That is good. That's funny. That's funny.
But how is this? Let's talk about comedy, though, because it's more interesting than Korean Confucianism, which is...
No, in relation... Talk about it in relation to Japanese Confucianism, Ed. Come on, stay on topic.
I'm terribly sorry. I don't know how. I'll try. So, Japanese Confucianism involves like blind women that have magic powers and can cure you. No, I don't know how I'm going to connect this to Count Dankula's stand-up comedy. So I'll just change the subject. I think one thing that's slightly concerning, the concept of anti-woke comedy, which you do. Clearly, and like Leo does, and so on, and it has its own boundaries, though. Like it has its own the anti-woke hit back has its own boundaries of things it won't look at. So it's like, what did this Boyle chap that you mentioned earlier? What did he do that was so outrageously cocked?
It was the fact as he started shitting all over his own work. It was sort of, he was complaining all the time about, oh, people aren't getting my jokes and people are getting like really mad when I make offensive jokes. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's what happens when you make offensive jokes. Like, why are you surprised? And a part of me, I did try and do a little bit of defense for him because I thought he was at his peak, his absolute prime when social media wasn't anywhere near as big as it was now. Right, and the overwhelming majority of boomers just weren't on the internet because they didn't need to be. You could still do things with letters and phone calls, whereas now so much stuff has to be done via the internet that the boomers were forced to come on the internet. And I think at the peak of his career, the only feedback he ever got was like a really angry news article sometimes, but he's like, that's just one guy. Just one angry little journalist, who cares? But I think now with the advent of social media and him having a presence on social media, he's now getting the full scope of rage and anger that he's actually causing. And maybe that's given, we call it trolls remorse, where he's kind of like, oh, people getting really, really mad. But then I do go after him because I'm kind of like, what did you think was going to happen? Like telling offensive jokes and people getting mad is like diving into the ocean and complaining about getting wet. Like, what did you think was going to happen? And that was just what really, really annoyed me, because he's kind of went, oh, even though it was totally fine for me to do it and I made my millions and I bought my big mansion and my nice car, I've decided that it's actually not a good thing anymore. And then he even went after Ricky Gervais because he was complaining about people attacking him for his jokes. And then he started attacking other comedians for their offensive jokes because they were on subjects that he didn't like. And that's the thing. Like, for example, one thing that I don't do in my stand-up, right, I totally would if I wanted to, I just don't do it, is the Catholic pedo priest jokes. And I don't do it not because I'm, oh, that's a sacred cow, or I'm Christian, so I'm not going to do it. No, I do it. I don't do it just because it's done to fucking death.
It's
also an exaggeration, because at my Catholic boys' school and the girls' Catholic girls' school that we had, right, there were six priests and only one of those is a paedophile.
Mark, I've got to stop this. I'm triggered by this. I was an altar boy for about 7 years, and they didn't even look at me once.
Really?
And that took me years. That rejection, that took me years to get over.
Were you a fat child? They don't like the fatties.
No, I don't know what. I wore my cassock a bit higher than usual. Nothing worked.
In a coquettish fashion.
Yeah. And you've just brought all that back. Shame on you.
Yeah, that is quite thoughtless. Because I imagine, like, if the extent of it is, yeah, but it's true. It is an utter cliche, and it's incredibly boring, and it's an easy target as well. Because who cares?
Yeah, like, that's the safe thing. Because, like, the thing is, if you did it about, you know, a synagogue or a mosque or something, that's when you get in the papers and get them shut down and cancel him, and like get him fired from his job and all that type of stuff, and like that's. The thing that bothers me is because, like, see how, like, the woke, edgy comedians like Frankie Boyle, if you make a trans joke or something, that's what he was raging at Ricky Gervais for, because Ricky Gervais made a trans joke. And he was like, oh, it's just very lazy. And it says the guy who's, like, 90% of your comedy is Catholic pedo priests and Tories. Am I right, guys? Like, that's it. In the video, to basically talk about all the cliches of Scottish comedy. Whenever you go into a Scottish comedy club, I can tell you the jokes. I can tell you the jokes because it's all the same things. But then if you decide to, oh, instead of going after pedo priests, I might go after imams. And then that's when everyone's like, oh, you can't do that. And like they get like furious about it. But that's why I don't do the mainstream comedy circuit. I mean, that's the thing is I did try, just nowhere would platform me because, you know, I'm the second coming of Hitler in the comedy scene up here, apparently. But well, like, we prefer...
Your dog is.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we prefer doing our own shows. So we've kind of created, like, you know, they say talk about parallel societies, parallel economies. We've kind of created like a parallel comedy scene where we have our list of clubs that, which we know are on side and they're good and they're not going to, like, you know, bend the knee whenever Antifa come knocking, telling them to deplatform us and stuff like that.
Is it Count Dankula, the goose stepping tour?
No, so a lot of people thought I was going to bring the dog with me, and I was like, no, I've done that joke. Like, I did that joke literally 10 years ago.
Now he's teaching his cat to build concentration camps. Actually, thinking about how you could get away with more in the past, about 25 years ago, I had a play at the Edinburgh Festival, what I wrote. And so I got sort of free or very, very reduced price tickets to various venues. And one of them was this comedy thing that started late because pubs were open later in Scotland and things started late. I remember there was this particular comedian called Daniel Kitson. I'm sure his name was Kitson.
Right.
And the stuff he went for was just, it would make your eyes bleed. I mean, it was so extreme. Like, jokes about paedophilia before everyone was doing jokes about them. Like, back when he didn't do jokes, like pre-Brass Eye. And it was quite amazing. And then there was another guy called he bought me a beer, some Jewish name, Krabovitz. What was his name?
I know him. I don't know why I'm blanking on him. He's one of the most offensive comedians up here.
Jerry Sadowitz. Yeah, he bought me a beer. Which it was brilliant. It was absolutely.
He pulls his cock out on stage.
I went to a midnight before I forget. Come on,
Lipton wants to say that he went to see Puppetry of the Penis at the Edinburgh Festival, don't you, Lipton?
No, I was about to say that when I was in primary school, I was the funniest person in my class.
Brilliant. Okay.
I was.
Lipton, what happened?
I was an actor. I was a dramatist.
Like a black Ben Johnson.
Yeah, I'm really funny.
I mean Ben Johnson, the playwright, not the runner. He was also called Ben Johnson, I think, wasn't he?
No, but to add to your... festival story, I went to the Fringe and there was a midnight performance, just to put it in context, by a Brazilian touring company of 101 Days of Sodom and Gomorrah. The leaflets were quite explicit. And after the first scene, it was really impressive. This Brazilian guy urinated into a bucket for about 5 minutes, you know, right in front of people. Talk about shy kidneys overcoming that. I almost gave a standing ovation just for that. And that was before the play started properly. Then there was a simulated orgy scene where all these naked, gorgeous Brazilian women were simulating various acts. And a Scottish guy walked from the back row to the front, threw his crumpled program onto the stage and stomped off. And I'm thinking, what are you expecting at midnight with a play called that?
Well, that's it. Well, the 100 Days of Sodom are very, very, very famously written by Marquis de Sade,
yeah, who's
probably the biggest degenerate ever to exist in history. He got thrown in the Bastille. In the Bastille for being such a degen.
Yeah. Count Dankula, I've been familiar with that aristocrat since my years as a high school student.
Oh no, he was a cretin. Like he was raping the home help, and he exclusively made sure he only hired like little girls and everything. The guy was a cretin.
Who's this?
Marquis de Sade. The guy who's the namesake of the term sadism.
Yeah. Whereas the guy that was the namesake of the term masochism, he was actually quite a reasonable guy. Reasonable labour guy. He's a stockbroker in Germany. He just liked to be whipped. I actually saw a play about that.
He wrote Venus in Furs, didn't he?
He did. I saw Venus in Furs at the Edinburgh Festival in the year 2000 or something, or 2001. Basically involved a man being whipped all the time by a woman and trodden on.
I just sent you my book.
Do a Scouse version, Venus. That's not fair.
Venus in Furs. Okay, Alder Banner says priests are now xenophiles rather than pedophiles. Thank you very much, sir. I don't really get that. But what's a pedophile?
If you say the term pedophile on like tweets or on your YouTube titles, basically gets it buried in the algorithm. So see how PDFs, like the file type that you get on computers whenever you download a form. So they call it PDF files because that doesn't get flagged in the system. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Sorry, Hugh asked P61. It is a bit slow. Well, I didn't. I'm not familiar with the system. So Enoch has the whip hand. Someone is saying. Yeah, I don't know. We've moved off topic a bit, but what topic were we on? Epsom riots. That was it. Right. No, I've got. What else have I got written down here? Desmond Morris has died. I don't know if that interests anybody. I liked his stuff. You know, Human Zoo. And...
Oh yes, I saw that earlier. He was 98, right?
Yes, and Human Zoo and Man Watching, and
he wasn't the guy who did the funny voices. That was Johnny Morris, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Johnny Morris. Johnny Morris, Desmond Morris, different people, completely different.
He was
people,
good though. Johnny Morris was, I'd argue, more significant than Desmond.
Well, because when you were born in the late 60s, and so you would have watched Johnny Morris's Animal Magic or whatever it was called.
I saw Desmond Morris being interviewed, and he couldn't do very funny voices and lip sync them with animals at all.
Absolutely not at all. No, he did that series, Humans Watching or Man Watching or something, in the early 90s. But that was...
He was basically a closet voyeurist, wasn't he?
That was ages. Yeah, just sat there watching people, saying, oh, look, they're doing this, and this is like what monkeys do. And basically his whole career was based around how humans are like monkeys, and this is how they're like monkeys in all of these different ways, which is probably true.
Paul, I sent you my book. I just sent you an email of my book, the best book you're going to read in your entire life.
Thank you, Lipton.
Have you sexed it up, Lipton?
A bit.
Because I'll tell Mark about it. Lipton wrote a book which was like the driest read you could ever read. Here is table four. In table four, there are four points of interest. Firstly, secondly, thirdly, and I was like, give me some fun. You know, it was like reading a book by Richard Lynn, which of course is what it was based on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was dedicated to him.
Dedicated to him, and it was written in his incredibly dry scientific style. And we've moved beyond that, Lipton. We've moved beyond. You can use the first person singular if you want. Sometimes it's loud. This is not the 50s. You know, you could go. It was like reading A.J. Ayres, whatever that book was called by him, Truth and Logic. It was like that level of dry. I'm like, give it some Jamaican, you know, give it some.
I can see why you wouldn't like that book, Ed.
No. Truth and Logic. No, yeah. Oh, I see what you're doing there. That's very good. Well, come on, you'd call him a crass logicianist or something. I mean, you
a positivist, a crass.
What about all the feelings? What about all the feelings?
Yeah, your emotivism.
No, no. Are you working on any new Bad Lads, Mark?
There's a few things that I'm working on at the moment. I've got a show that I'm trying to get off the ground that involves drama, so some of the people involved are being kind of flakes about it, which is kind of annoying. But at the moment, I'll just tell people, I'm working on Dragon Lord Part 4. I think enough time has passed. I don't know if any of you know, but he's basically the German equivalent of Chris Chan, but he doesn't have a severe mental disability to use as an excuse for his behavior. He's just an egotistical, narcissistic type of guy that everyone in Germany universally hates. Basically, he used to get trolled all the time, and one day he made a video threatening to beat people up. He's like, oh, if you want to say that, come to my house and fight me. And he read out his full address on stream. And so basically, for how long did this go on? For like 8 years, people would descend on his house. They called it the pilgrimage, where they would travel across Germany to go to his house and smash his windows and blow his bin up and fire fireworks at him and like hit him with eggs and just do everything. And it got to the point where it got so bad. He had multiple charges like waiting against him as well. And it got to the point where it got so bad that the local council forcibly purchased his house from him to just get him the fuck out of the area. And they didn't even like try. His house was a shit pile. It was a disgusting pigsty that he was living in. And it got to the point where they didn't want this house standing as a monument to the horrific history they wanted to forget, and they thought that the house would just attract more people, so they just demolished it. The council just sank the money and went, here's your money, fuck off, immediately demolished the house. As of now, it's the plot's just still in an empty vacant lot. They don't want to build anything on it. He spent the money on a Ford Ranger, and he went, oh, I'm just going to travel Germany in my car, and if the trolls find me, I can just drive away from them. They found him in like 5 minutes. There was even an interactive Google map where they were tracking sightings of him, like he was fucking Bigfoot or something. It turned out that he never had a license, so the Ranger got impounded, and he's been homeless. He's just been living homeless since then. But the reason I'm doing the video is recently, all of his online accounts are gone, despite threats from judges that they've said, delete your accounts and all of this ends. Just delete your accounts and vanish from the internet and all of this ends. And he was like, no, I'm not doing that. But now it seems like he has, and he hasn't made any new accounts. So that's kind of interesting. So I'm doing what could very well be the last part. This is part 4. No, but this guy's life has been a hell of a shit show. Just Pandora's box got opened on him ever since he read his address out on stream. They even held a music festival outside of his house. Riot police had to get called in.
You know what would save you, Ed?
What?
You can't pronounce your own address in Finnish.
That's true, exactly. I can't. I always pronounce it wrong.
So have you wanted to kick the shit out of someone in 4 streets over?
There's probably some street that I don't know what there is a word that it does mean something else. So there probably is such a word, and I can't actually pronounce the name of my road in Finnish. No, I certain sounds that you have to. Yes, Lipton.
I was just about to pose this question: when are we going to get our own TV show on GB News?
I think we're considered too controversial for GB News.
No, I think we should be on GB News. We would make a lot of money.
No, GB News.
I got put on timeout from GB News, which is why I haven't been back on in a good few months.
Basically,
it's great when you're in the reading room. Like you're basically said, we used to do like headliners, but they cancelled headliners. But they have another show that's kind of similar to it, where you're talking about news articles and stuff like that. And basically, it was interesting where I had a producer come into the room warning me. He says, "Do not do this." He was warning me not to call Brigitte Macron a paedophile on TV. And everything, because there was the story was about her and him, and the case where she had to get her clunge out in court. And I was like, you know how her and her husband met? I was like, she was his teacher, he was 15, they had an affair, she was married, you know, French, and everything. And I was like, so she's a nonce. And he was like, you cannot call her that on air. You're not calling her that on air. And I went, fine. But then But then I said something where I says that her vagina probably looks like a leper who smoked a firework. And then I also called Michelle Obama Big Mike on it as well. And yeah, so I've not been back on GB News since, and I'm in a bit of a timeout.
I was invited by the president of the Oxford Union Society to speak at the Oxford Union on "This House Believes That the West Should Be Suspicious of Islam." And then I was like, okay, I can do these dates. But, you know, apparently that wasn't good enough. They wanted to do it on a different date. So I didn't think I'd have flown from Finland all the way to Oxford just to speak anyway. But at first I wondered if it was a joke. Like, how can they possibly want me to come and speak on Islam? But
I got a similar one pretty recently as well.
Well, Islam was Islam.
No, not Islam. I got an email for the Oxford Union. The House believes that the overwhelming majority of modern youth activism is entirely performative.
I would
have fun with that. Well, I would have a good laugh with that one. And I said, they
invite loads and loads of people, and then they just pick the ones they want from those to say yes or something. But the good.
Fair enough.
It's quite rude, really. It's an invitation. Yes, Lipton. Yeah.
Well, I was about to say, Ed, that because I'm a student of George Wooster Dekoff, another classical sociologist.
You've gone black. You've gone black.
I know, I don't know why I'm black. There's some issue, I don't know why.
We know why you're black.
No, it's my computer, it's having a problem. The internet, so, but let me make the point.
I've got news for you, Ed.
Please listen.
Yeah, sorry.
Christianity. You're laughing. Christianity is an Eastern religion. It doesn't matter. Christianity is an Eastern religion. However,
I have a dream.
It was saturated in the culture of secular philosophy. The church fathers were exposed to Greek philosophy.
Mm.
Saint Augustine was a scholar. However, in Islam, Muhammad was... Apparently, there's a debate. Was he literate? Was he illiterate? I'm not sure. But what I do know is that Muhammad was an aggressive man, a trader, and not super brilliant.
Can you just smile?
Let me continue, please. Let me continue. You're so unserious.
Sorry.
So let me make the point quickly. So the point is this. Islam is a religion that's embedded in a pre-modern tribal context. So is it that Islam is backward, or is it that the intellectual origins of Islam? Yeah, that's backward.
I don't agree with you, Lipton. I think if you want to seriously, rather than lots of jokes about how black you are, Islam is influenced by Christianity, it's influenced by Judaism, and it's influenced by local paganism.
The question is,
if I had done this debate at Oxford Union Society, which I wasn't realistically going to fly over just to do that, but what I would have said is this is just cowardice, basically, these people having a go at Islam. This is absolute cowardice. They have a go at Islam because they're afraid to talk about the real issues.
And what's the real issue?
There's nothing inherent in Islam. Kill all the people and kill the women. And kill everything and leave only and salt the ground. Where's that from? Islam? No, it's from the Old Testament. It's from Judaism. Kill all the men, but keep the women and take them as sex slaves. Where's that from? Is that from Islam? No, that's from the Old Testament. That's from Judaism. Oh, kill everybody and God will, including the children and the women, God will know his own. Where's that from? That's from Christianity. Okay, that's the killing of the Cathars. There's no inherent difference. It's just that Islam is in a different stage of development because
that's my point.
Well, there is a difference. There is a difference, Ed.
Because Islam...
Wait there is a difference, though.
What's that?
Before you agree, Lipton, because all the things you've quoted were not said by the leader of the religion. They were textual writings.
No, Moses was. No, bollocks. The Judaism stuff was said by Moses.
Who is the same as Jesus Christ or the prophet.
It's effectively the founder of Judaism, yeah. So I
don't
think...
Yeah, you know, Old Testament to some level. The Old Testament is the Silmarillion, the New Testament is the Fellowship.
The New Testament is that they're at a stage where they're weak. And because they're at that stage where they're weak, then it's all virtue signaling and stuff like that. That was the stage of the New Testament. And then as you get to them having power based on St. Paul and whatever, and his way of looking at things, which was not the same as Jesus, but it basically, you, some people have argued that we shouldn't even call it Christianity, we should call it Paulinism.
Back to your point about Islam, Ed, because you wrote a book on Islam and they have been following
I'm saying that you can have incredibly liberal groups within Islam, such as the Alawites or whatever, that have a mass where they drink the blood of Ali or whatever, or you can have these incredibly extreme groups like the Wahhabists. And within Christianity, likewise, you get laid-back, funky Christians, and you get those that were the crusader types that emerged in specific circumstances, where, by the way, Islam was more developed culturally than Christianity.
Yeah, what's the Christian equivalent of the Crusades? Aren't they could be theologically, you could try and ex post facto theologically justify them, but where's the biblical justification for the Crusades in the actual texts?
Well, a lot of them were retaliatory.
They would draw from the old. They would draw from the old Testament, but
I don't think there's a direct equivalent to jihad, no. For example.
No, not at all, Paul. The Crusades in Christianity, they actually reflect Islamic practices, just like the Inquisition.
Well, so you're blaming the Muslims for the Inquisition?
The Inquisition and the Crusades. Those are not peculiar to Christianity.
No, I mean, what Christianity has done is it's got a... I mean, I agree with Paul that if you want to be absolutely strict about it, you can say Jesus seems pretty much like a kind of pacifist type and whatever. But the way that it's developed via St. Paul and via other Christian leaders is that you then have the Bible as a corpus of ways that you can behave in different circumstances. And which you can be drawn upon to justify anything from slavery to colonialism to whatever. That's the nature of Christianity, and Islam has been very similar. You have forms of Islam that are focused on warfare and whatever, like Wahhabism, and forms of Islam that are just laid back and funky.
But I still go to this. There is a bit of a key difference. Jesus wasn't a warlord.
Not at all.
Fine, but
you can't just say fine and glibly batter. No, but
I think the main influence
of your religion was a warlord. I think that just call me old fashioned, have a slight influence on how warlike your religion is.
Okay, well, the main influence of Judaism was Moses, clearly.
Yeah, but we're talking about Moses flitting in and out of Christianity or Judaism, which you're talking about now.
Moses was certainly a warlord. So you could argue that he's a significant indirect influence on Christianity. My point is that what I would have argued.
Muhammad, a difference between Muhammad and Moses is that Muhammad even instigated war against people who were not criminals, who were not antisocial.
Moses instigated war against the Philistines, against the Ahabites, against all kinds of people.
Yeah, and those people were the biblically cursed people. So I'm not justifying what he did, but there's context the actions of Moses. There's no context for what Muhammad did, really. He was a tyrant.
So it was Moses. If people that dissented from his views had them killed.
Okay, Ed.
Ed, if you're going to take that argument, could you put when he came down from Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments, could you find me the commandment that says go out and kill a load of people?
You could find
something at the end of a shopping list, Ed, but since the Decalogue is the foundational list of it's the clues in the title, the Ten Commandments, okay, not so the ten slight suggestions. If you're feeling like it,
he goes around directly saying you will kill everybody, kill all the men, but you can take the women for yourself.
You're not going to answer the point about the Ten Commandments.
I don't know why that has to be separated, why that's so
because
thin.
Would you accept the Decalogue is the foundational precy of the Old Testament religion? It's not much clearer, and these are the 10 basic things you must
do. So he says, worship no other God but I, and then those that do worship another God but Yahweh, he has them killed.
No, it doesn't say that. If he was, if he broke his own commandments,
oh, this is,
that's
this is,
no.
This
listen,
is, this is.
I'm trying to get you.
The commandments don't say that you should kill people. Don't worry.
Yeah, but he did kill them for it.
Right, that's a separate issue, Ed. That what I'm suggesting is there are other religions where the commandments are to kill people, and the founder of the religion was quite happy to kill people. So there's already a difference that you're not accepting. There's what that you can say things and put them in a text. And then you can break your own commandments. So Moses was a hypocrite, is the worst you can accuse him of.
And Paul, remember, interpret the Bible within its philosophical and geopolitical context. There was no specific geopolitical context for some of the actions of Muhammad.
He was stating that he was inspired by God to do these things. That Yahweh
Muhammad didn't have a reason to kill a lot of people. There was no philosophy.
But again, Ed, I'm not going to let you get away with this. Like, could you tell me where, Ed? No. Answer the question, though. Where in the Ten Commandments is there an explicit instruction to go off and kill a load of people? As opposed to an explicit instruction not to.
Is there a Muhammad Ten Commandments where there is a specific instruction, a Ten Commandments, the equivalent of that, which tells you to do that? No.
No, there are. Because I can't create something that he didn't produce. But there are hadiths. No, there are sayings. I'm not an Islamic scholar, but I'm sure there are sayings I've heard
Moses.
Them repeated.
Right, and there are sayings of Moses where he says, go and kill these people.
No, but there aren't. If you want to said, what are the essential? You're so right, you're going to ignore the Decalogue because that doesn't fit your argument. Not, that's fine, that's fine.
If you say that Moses is the ideal person that you should idealise, and you say Muhammad is the ideal person that you should idealise...
No, I never said Moses was... That's the thing you're saying.
That's the central issue in the theology.
It isn't, because Moses came down from Mount Sinai, not with his own list, but what he was told by God.
Right,
so
but then
you
he
can tell Moses states, to go and shove the tablets up his arse.
He equally states that he states a number of that God speaks through him. This is stated in the Old Testament that the burning bush was
again,
God
Paul, the biblical.
Yes, and that's his summary. What God told him was not to kill people.
No, but then God tells God then tells him various other things.
Oh, yeah, but what? Can I just clarify? While they were chiseled on stone, which someone naive like me might imply they were to always be obeyed and they were the primary instructions. What I'm hearing, Ed, in a mutually conducive discussion, is that the fact there are other things said that weren't in stone and weren't the primary instructions. Because you're scrabbling to deflect from the Decalogue, you'd rather we took those as the most important sayings.
I don't understand what he states that he's inspired by God in all things that he says and does. So I can see the centrality of it. Fine, but he in the other things, if he is a prophet and he's inspired by God,
there's inspiration and there's being told directly from God.
Well, that's
himself.
What he stated was the case. Raymond Sycamore says $10. I'm dying. Have my money. Thank you, sir. I don't know what that's in relation to.
Well,
you are being very pedantic. And then Aldo Banner £2 says priests are. Oh, done that one. There must be a third one somewhere. Chris Mack says, I think Yahweh said, do not murder, do not kill. Oh, well, in specific circumstances, yeah. But then in the book of Leviticus, he seems to say there's all kinds of things you should kill people.
And you've also coveted my ass, so you've broken another commandment.
That was Richard's ass, surely.
Coveted an ass, let's put it that way.
I don't know. Mark, do you have any comments on the Old Testament, Quran, Hadith?
Well, I'm an Orthodox Christian.
Are you?
So, yeah. I've been going to church for like a year and a half now.
I didn't know they got many Orthodox Christians up your way.
No, they're kind of relatively new. We've only just recently had our first bishop ordained in Scotland for like 1,000 years as well. So, yeah, no, I do go to the Orthodox Church. Yeah.
So, Scottish Orthodox?
Yeah, so Scottish Orthodox. Originally, the church came from Russia, but they've had, like, rather unfortunate things with the war and stuff like that. and everything, because everybody thinks they've got links to Russia, but they have this whole like, no, anyone and everyone's welcome, because wherever you go, there's Russians, Ukrainians, there's Greeks, there's everybody at the church.
Do they have the Patriarch of the Iron Brew?
They don't have the Patriarch of the Iron Brew, unfortunately. No. They've got St. Mungo and all, yeah.
They give you Iron Brew as part of the communion.
They give you Iron Brew and bits of pizza crunch, you know, like for communion. Yeah. Good Lord.
Well, I had them.
Iron Brew's great. I fucking love Iron Brew. Like, I love Iron Brew too.
Yeah. Like, when I was in Glasgow, I had this Indian friend, and I used to call him Iron Brew.
Why?
I couldn't remember his name, so I just said Iron Brew. I couldn't remember his name. I have good memory. I just wanted to call him Iron Brew.
There was a woman in Old Aberdeen called Mad Maggie that used to beg for money for Iron Brew every time I passed her. To ask my husband, he's had twa heart attack, and can I have 50p for a bottle of Iron Brew? I never.
Was she Welsh?
Yeah, very good.
No, that's Northern Scots, that accent.
That is Northern Scots. Thank you. I know I've got it right. I like as well that when they come from sort of up higher than that, in sort of Inverness up there. And it's kind of in this kind of way that they speak.
This is one thing that I've never comprehended, right? Whenever I hear an accent in Scotland, like, you see how, like, whenever people live in close proximity, like, say, for example, I've got the Glaswegian accent, the Ouija accent, but if you drive an hour that direction, you get to Edinburgh, like, eh, where everybody, like, kind of talks like this, eh, where it sounds a wee bit like they're singing, eh? But you're kind of, there's similarities where you can like, right, I can see how the Glaswegian kind of goes into that. There's overlaps and everything, it's fine. And then you've got the same all over Scotland. And then you get the Isle of Harris, which is, I don't know what the fuck that is. I don't know where. Oh, hello there, David. How are you? Are you coming in for your tea, David? It's like, what the fuck is that, man? Like,
I am not obstructing you, sergeant. It's Wicker Man. It's Wicker Man. It's the Wicker Man. It's
like, that accent is mental. Like, the Isle of Harris, I don't know where. I don't know. Maybe Welsh. It might be Welsh.
Yeah.
It's a weird accent.
I do all Welsh. Although my Welsh, ironically, turns into Indian. Okay, I'd like to thank you all. I hope you've enjoyed our intelligent theological debate. And I'd like to thank you all for tuning in. I'd like to thank Count Dankula for coming. Remember to subscribe to his channel. And we will see you all. I won't be here next Monday. I won't be here because I'll be in Germany. I'll be in the GDR. So right. I'll see you the Monday. What? A conference. So I'll see you the Monday after that. And tally-ho, chaps. And remember to stay in the studio while it uploads. And goodbye!
Bye. Bye.